Now I saw that just on the other side of this plain, the pilgrims came to a place where stood an old monument, hard by the highway side, at the sight of which they were both concerned, because of the strangeness of the form thereof, for it seemed to them as if it had been a woman transformed into the shape of a pillar. Here therefore they stood looking, and looking upon it, but could not for a time tell what they should make thereof. At last Hopeful espied written above upon the head thereof a writing in an unusual hand, but he being no scholar called to Christian, for he was learned, to see if he could pick out the meaning. So he came, and after a little laying of letters together, he found the same to be this: Remember Lot's wife. So he read it to his fellow, after which they both concluded that that was the pillar of salt into which Lot's wife was turned, for her looking back with a covetous heart, while she was going from Sodom for safety, which sudden and amazing sight gave them occasion of this discourse. Ah, my brother, this is a seasonable sight. It came opportunely to us after the invitation which Demas gave us to come over to view the hill Lucca, and had we gone over, as he desired us, and as thou wast inclined to do, my brother, we had, for aught I know, been made ourselves, like this woman, a spectacle for those that shall come after to behold. I am sorry that I was so foolish, and am made to wonder that I am not now as Lot's wife. For wherein was the difference betwixt her sin and mine? She only looked back, and I had a desire to go see. Let grace be adored, and let me be ashamed, that ever such a thing should be in mine heart. Let us take notice of what we see here, for our help for time to come. This woman escaped one judgment, for she fell not by the destruction of Sodom, yet she was destroyed by another. As we see, she is turned into a pillar of salt. True, and she may be to us both caution and example. Caution, that we should shun her sin, or a sign of what judgment will overtake such as shall not be prevented by this caution. So Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, with the 250 men that perished in their sin, did also become a sign or example to beware. But above all, I muse at one thing, to wit, how Demas and his fellows can stand so confidently yonder to look for that treasure which this woman, but for looking behind her after, for we read not that she stepped one foot out of the way, was turned into a pillar of salt, especially since the judgment which overtook her did make her an example within sight of where they are, for they cannot choose but see her. Did they but lift up their eyes? It is a thing to be wondered at, and it argueth that their heart is grown desperate in the case, and I cannot tell who to compare them to so fitly as to them that pick pockets in the presence of the judge, or that will cut purses under the gallows. It is said of the men of Sodom that they were sinners exceedingly, because they were sinners before the Lord, that is, in his eyesight, and notwithstanding the kindnesses that he had showed them, for the land of Sodom was now like the Garden of Eden heretofore, this therefore provoked him the more to jealousy, and made their plague as hot as the fire of the Lord out of heaven could make it. And it is most rationally to be concluded that such, even such as these are, that shall sin in the sight, yea, and that too in despite of such examples that are set continually before them to caution them to the contrary, must be partakers of severest judgments. Doubtless thou hast said the truth, but what a mercy is it that neither thou, but especially I, am not made myself this example. This ministereth occasion to us to thank God, to fear before him, and always to remember Lot's wife. I saw then that they went on their way to a pleasant river, which David the king called the River of God, but John the River of the Water of Life. Now their way lay just upon the bank of this river. Here therefore Christian and his companion walked with great delight. They drank also of the water of the river, which was pleasant and enlivening to their weary spirits. Besides, on the banks of this river, on either side were green trees, that bore all manner of fruit, and the leaves of the trees were good for medicine. With the fruit of these trees they were also much delighted, and the leaves they eat to prevent surfeits and other diseases that are incident to those that heat their blood by travels. On either side of the river was also a meadow, curiously beautified with lilies, and it was green all the year long. In this meadow they lay down and slept, for here they might lie down safely. When they awoke, they gathered again of the fruit of the trees, and drank again of the water of the river, and then lay down again to sleep. Thus they did several days and nights. Then they sang, "Behold ye, how these crystal streams do glide, to comfort pilgrims by the highway side. The meadows green, besides their fragrant smell, yield dainties for them, and he that can tell, what pleasant fruit, yea, leaves, these trees do yield, will soon sell all, that he may buy this field." So when they were disposed to go on, for they were not as yet at their journey's end, they eat and drank and departed. Now I beheld in my dream that they had not journeyed far, but the river and the way for a time parted, at which they were not a little sorry, yet they durst not go out of the way. Now the way from the river was rough, and their feet tender by reason of their travels. So the soul of the pilgrims were much discouraged because of the way. Wherefore still as they went on, they wished for better way. Now a little before them, there was on the left hand of the road a meadow, and a stile to go over into it, and that meadow is called Bypath Meadow. Then said Christian to his fellow, "If this meadow lieth along by our wayside, let us go over into it." Then he went to the stile to see, and behold, a path lay along by the way on the other side of the fence. "'Tis according to my wish," said Christian. "Here is the easiest going. Come, good hopeful, and let us go over." "But how if this path should lead us out of the way?" "That's not likely," said the other. "Look, doth it not go along by the wayside?" So Hopeful, being persuaded by his fellow, went after him over the stile. When they were gone over and were got into the path, they found it very easy for their feet, and withal, they looking before them, espied a man walking as they did, and his name was Vain Confidence. So they called after him and asked him, "Whither that way led?" He said to the celestial gate, "Look," said Christian, "did not I tell you so? By this you may see we are right." So they followed, and he went before them. But behold, the night came on, and it grew very dark, so that they that were behind lost the sight of him that went before. He therefore that went before, Vain Confidence by name, not seeing the way before him, fell into a deep pit, which was on purpose there made by the prince of those grounds, to catch vain glorious fools withal, and was dashed in pieces with his fall. Now Christian and his fellow heard him fall, so they called to know the matter, but there was none to answer, only they heard a groaning. Then said Hopeful, "Where are we now?" Then was his fellow silent, as mistrusting that he had led him out of the way, and now it began to rain, and thunder, and lighten, in a very dreadful manner, and the water rose amain. Then Hopeful groaned in himself, saying, "Oh, that I had kept on my way! Who could have thought that this path should have led us out of the way? I was afraid on it at the very first, and therefore gave you that gentle caution. I would have spoke plainer, but that you are older than I. Good brother, be not offended. I am sorry I have brought thee out of the way, and that I have put thee in such imminent danger. Pray, my brother, forgive me. I did not do it of an evil intent." "Be comforted, my brother, for I forgive thee, and believe too that this shall be for our good. I am glad I have with me a merciful brother, but we must not stand thus. Let's try to go back again." "But, good brother, let me go before." "No, if you please, let me go first, that if there be any danger, I may be first therein, because by my means we are both gone out of the way." "No," said Hopeful, You shall not go first, for your mind being troubled may lead you out of the way again. Then for their encouragement, they heard the voice of one saying, Let thine heart be towards the highway, even the way that thou wentest, turn again. But by this time the waters were greatly risen, by reason of which the way of going back was very dangerous. Then I thought that it is easier going out of the way when we are in, than going in when we are out. Yet they adventured to go back, but it was so dark, and the flood was so high, that in their going back they had like to have been drowned 9 or 10 times. Neither could they, with all the skill they had, get again to the stile that night. Wherefore at last, lighting under a little shelter, they sat down there till the day break, but being weary, they fell asleep. Now there was not far from the place where they lay a castle, called Doubting Castle, the owner whereof was Giant Despair, and it was in his grounds they now were sleeping. Wherefore he, getting up in the morning early, and walking up and down in his fields, caught Christian and Hopeful asleep in his grounds. Then with a grim and surly voice he bid them awake, and asked them whence they were, and what they did in his grounds. They told him they were pilgrims, and that they had lost their way. Then said the giant, You have this night trespassed me, by trampling in and lying on my grounds, and therefore you must go along with me. So they were forced to go, because he was stronger than they. They also had but little to say, for they knew themselves in a fault. The giant therefore drove them before him, and put them into his castle, in a very dark dungeon, nasty and stinking to the spirit of these two men. Here then they lay from Wednesday morning till Saturday night, without one bit of bread, or drop of drink, or light, or any to ask how they did. They were therefore here in an evil case, and were far from friends and acquaintance. Now in this place Christian had double sorrow, because 'twas through his unadvised haste that they were brought into this distress. Now Giant Despair had a wife, and her name was Diffidence. So when he was gone to bed, he told his wife what he had done, to wit, that he had taken a couple of prisoners and cast them into his dungeon for trespassing on his grounds. Then he asked her also what he had best to do further to them. So she asked him what they were, whence they came, and whither they were bound, and he told her. Then she counselled him that when he rose in the morning he should beat them without any mercy. So when he arose he getteth him a grievous crab-tree cudgel, and goes down into the dungeon to them, and there first falls to rating of them as if they were dogs, although they gave him never a word of distaste. Then he falls upon them, and beats them fearfully, in such sort that they were not able to help themselves, or to turn them upon the floor. This done, he withdraws and leaves them there to condole their misery, and to mourn under their distress. So all that day they spent the time in nothing but sighs and bitter lamentations. The next night, she talking with her husband about them further, and understanding that they were yet alive, did advise him to counsel them to make away themselves. So when morning was come, he goes to them in a surly manner, as before, and perceiving them to be very sore with the stripes that he had given them the day before, he told them that since they were never like to come out of that place, their only way would be forthwith to make an end of themselves, either with knife, halter, or poison. For why, said he, should you choose life, seeing it is attended with so much bitterness? But they desired him to let them go. With that he looked ugly upon them, and rushing to them, had doubtless made an end of them himself, but that he fell into one of his fits, for he sometimes in sunshine weather fell into fits, and lost for a time the use of his hand. Wherefore he withdrew, and left them as before to consider what to do. Then did the prisoners consult between themselves, whether 'twas best to take his counsel or no, and thus they began to discourse. Brother, said Christian, what shall we do? The life that we now live is miserable. For my part, I know not whether 'tis best to live thus, or to die out of hand. my soul chooseth strangling rather than life, and the grave is more easy for me than this dungeon. Shall we be ruled by the giant? Indeed, our present condition is dreadful, and death would be far more welcome to me than thus for ever to abide. But yet, let us consider, the lord of the country to which we are going have said, Thou shalt do no murder, no, not to another man's person. Much more, then, are we forbidden to take his counsel to kill ourselves. Besides, he that kills another can but commit murder upon his body, but for one to kill himself is to kill body and soul at once. And moreover, my brother, thou talkest of ease in the grave, but hast thou forgotten the hell, whither for certain the murderers go? For no murderer hath eternal life, etc. And let us consider again that all the law is not in the hand of giant despair. Others, so far as I can understand, have been taken by him, as well as we, and yet have escaped out of his hands. Who knows, but that God, who made the world, may cause that giant despair may die, or that at some time or other he may forget to lock us in, or but he may in short time have another of his fits before us, and may lose the use of his limbs. And if ever that should come to pass again, for my part, I am resolved to pluck up the heart of a man, and to try my utmost to get from under his hand. I was a fool that I did not try to do it before. But, however, my brother, let's be patient, and endure a while. The time may come that may give us a happy release. But let us not be our own murderers. With these words, Hopeful at present did moderate the mind of his brother. So they continued together, in the dark, that day, in their sad and doleful condition. With Demas and the silver mine behind them, both pilgrims soon come to an old monument. The monument was a woman who had been transformed into a shape of the Pillar of Salt. This we soon find out to be Lot's wife, with the scriptural message, Remember Lot's wife. Christian reminds Hopeful that this was for them a seasonal sight, especially with what had gone before in the form of the silver mine and the temptation surrounding money, praise, and gain. Lot's wife, though physically leaving Sodom, had never taken her heart, her covetous heart, out of it. The pillar reminds us all that just as the two pilgrims had left the silver mine and the temptation surrounding Demas and all other things, that steadfastness is still required ahead for the journey. We must be constantly guarding our hearts. Satan is always at hand with some new but old device. Soon these men would find this out in the most agonizing of ways. But first there was welcome relief, and the two men find their way to a pleasant river. John Bunyan references both Old and New Testament at this stage in his book. Whether we think of Psalm 65 and the River of God, or Revelation 22 with the River of the Water of Life, both are places of refreshment. Both represent the peace and joy which God supplies in Jesus Christ. Here, my friend, is a time of refreshing for all who love him. And although as pilgrims there will be many barren spells and trying times, yet God in his goodness supplies the elims, the palm trees, the occasions for rest. How needful these are, and how important we must avail of them when we can, because we never know when the next trial will be. It is the next part of the story which makes for very sorry reading, especially as Christian, who for so long had led by example, now finds himself the cause of leading both he and Hopeful astray. Good men, even God's good people, are men and women at best. Our eyes must firmly always be on Christ. With now tired feet and discouraged because of the way, and yet, we might say in memory of times which they had overcome past problems, there was something of the perfect storm, the danger of being content in self and forgetful of the Lord. When a meadow presents itself and seems to lie parallel to the true path, Christian, despite the hesitancy within Hopeful, believes it offers a better way, a more comfortable way. However, it is not the true way, and soon, under the figure of vain confidence, they find themselves in imminent danger. Although realizing their danger, things have begun to worsen. Storms have set in. The men are repentant of their actions, especially Christian, but still there is reliance on self and the attempt to use self-skill to return to the right way. But they are unable, and they are cast down and in need of rest, in need of shelter and sleep, and soon they find it. But without knowing, they have entered a territory of Doubting Castle, occupied by the infamous Giant Despair, who soon takes them captive. It is here the doubts and fears which so often snare the believer are represented in a vivid manner. It is a dark, unforgiven place, and often brings many a Christian into lonely places, doomed by a diffidence the wife of Giant Despair, and beaten by the giant himself. They are presented with threats. In such a dark place, Christian is doubly fretful, blaming himself and thinking death is the only answer. But it is here that Hopeful reminds Christian that they must resist such despair and hope to the end.